report from the chairman. The first item is that we've had a resignation from the board. And that's always kind of a sad thing. I do understand it. We received a letter on the 28th of January, I believe it was. Dear Barbara and Pearl, I am writing to advise you that after careful consideration, I have decided to resign my position of commissioner with NCBVI. I am convinced that I need more time available to fully devote myself to the job, and that just is not possible at this point in time. I have very much enjoyed my tenure on the commission. Perhaps a better time for me to serve would be after I have completed my education. Again, I want to thank both of you as well as the commission and this opportunity, and wish all of you the best. Thank you sincerely, Nichelle Ferreira. And both Pearl and I did write back to her thanking her for her service on the commission board and encouraging her to stay in touch and consider applying again in the future. It does leave a position open on the board, and we encourage people to apply through the governor's office. I know there have been some applications filed, and I hope that by our next meeting we will be a full board again. The next item on my report is interaction with legislators. And certainly there has been that in the last little while. I don't think there's probably anybody here who doesn't know about the situation with the bill and the issues and concerns document and all of those things. We will be discussing those things later on in the meeting. But what I do want to say as chairman of the board is that it really is important for all of us to consider carefully when we take an action. Certainly our legislators are available to us, and one of the things about being a visible agency now is that our access to legislators really is easier. They do know who we are. We are definable. We have names and faces and personalities and all of that. And it is easier to interact with them. That is a good thing. And I think it's a good thing that we have made ourselves known, made them aware of who we are, what we think is important, how we want to proceed, and all of that. There is a danger, though, if we do things, if anybody does things concerning the commission without thinking it through, or without substantiating what has been happening, or without dealing with the way things need to be done in order for them to work well. In the responses that were given to those issues and concerns that Pearl wrote, and I certainly hope that everybody here has read those. I know that Pearl thought about those and deliberated on them, and the answers that she gave were thought out and very well done. I think that one of the things that I hope everyone will pay attention to is that we have a method of dealing with things like that, not so that people can be skipped over and that kind of thing, but so that people really do have opportunities to be heard and to work things through. And as we were interacting with senators, of course, one of the main things that they wanted to know was, you know, who is it that is having the problems, or what are the real situations and all of that. And as the chairman of the board of this commission, it was at times embarrassing to you know, to say, well, you know, there haven't really been any substantiated things. You know, no one has really come and talked with us or with me about these things. You know, there, like I had mentioned at the hearing about the bill to abolish the commission, you know, I have received an email from someone about one thing, and I responded about that. Between our last two meetings, I received one email from someone, and I responded to that. But, you know, it feels then like we are somehow not reaching out in a way that we need to. And if we're not, we need help in learning how to do that. If we are, and people are just, if people are afraid to talk to us, usually what happens when people are afraid of something is that they don't get what they want. Because in this world, we really do need to be able to, if something is important enough to us, step forward and either ask for it or make a suggestion or do whatever. If someone says that, you know, that they're intimidated or something like that, you know, I don't want to be flip about anything at all. I am absolutely serious, but that really is something that person needs help to get over. Because as long as we allow ourselves to be intimidated by someone else for whatever reason, as blind people, we can't possibly hope to take our equal place in the world. You know, it is scary to me sometimes to do some of the things that need to be done and that beg to be done or whatever. If I allow that to keep me from doing it, then that becomes a problem for all of us. I hope that we can be an accessible board. I hope that we are. And if we're doing something that we need help to do differently, it is up to the blind people of this state to help us to know what that is and how to do it better. There were times in interacting with senators when it was wonderful because some of them do know, quite a few of them, that when they see something like that, they know that they've dealt with some of us for years and years, and they're going, you know, where did this come from? What is it? And some of them did ask us. That is a good thing. Because if it weren't for that, we might not find out about some of these things, and they could end up, you know, going further or doing worse things than otherwise they might. So we are getting that kind of reputation and that kind of working relationship with the unicameral, where they do know, a lot of them, what we stand for, and they have begun to understand some of the things that probably they ought to ask us about before they make decisions about. Now, of course, there are some of them who don't do that. There are a few of them, in fact, who took something like that and ran with it. And so, you know, we really do need to understand that as we make our place, we need to do it deliberately, and we need to do it with consideration. And also, we need to do it, insofar as we can, with trust. It really does make a difference how a person approaches something. And if you think about it, if you trust the people you have asked to do a job, then you will do things one way. If you don't, you'll do them another. We are in the business of trying to earn your trust. We hope we are. And if we are, then hopefully that will translate into coming and talking with us about things and feeling free to do that. Which leads directly to the next item on my report, which is the testimony before the legislature. On the 13th, we did have the hearing on LB 611, which was to abolish the commission. It was tempting to go to the legislature and say, you know, here we are again dealing with yet another attempt to do this in this short amount of time. And so we're being asked to once again have ourselves on the chopping block. That really didn't seem like a very good idea. So what we did instead was to go and to use the opportunity to express the kinds of things that we are doing and have done, the positive growth that there has been over the last less than 3 years in our existence, and to give them a chance to know firsthand the kinds of things that are happening. In my testimony, I talked about our visibility and also our accountability. And there was only one person who testified in favor of the bill, and that person had only hearsay and rumor and anecdote, as did Senator Tyson, the introducer of the bill. Everyone else who testified testified against it. And one of the things that we can, you know, take heart some in is that when something happened as a situation where what there was just hearsay and all of that, that on the very next day they voted 6-0 to do away with it. And, you know, that is a good thing. And, you know, we can be very glad for that. But it's sure a risky kind of a deal to have that kind of thing happen. You know, we really need to be careful. And the last thing that I want to say is to thank everybody who helped to kill that bill. There were a lot of people who testified against it, and I'm going to attempt to thank them by name, and I hope that I don't miss anybody, and if I did, I hope somebody will point it out. I testified against it. Roy Hobley, Steve Spiker, Amy Eidenmiller, Dr. Van Zandt, Carlos Servan, Eliana Messer, Dave Sampson, Ryan Strunk, Nye Bond, Daryl Walla, Mike Floyd. There was a letter from someone named Annie Kirsten, Ryan Ozentoski, Brent Hyen, and I believe that was everybody. As I say, if I left anybody out, I certainly didn't mean to, and I really, really think that kind of thing where people from all different approaches came and let them know what was happening was a very good thing. And I do, as the chairman of the board, thank everybody who went to the hearing and didn't testify also, because it's important that there be people there in numbers, and there were. And so those of you who didn't actually get up and say something, I also thank you for being there, for being supportive, and for signing the paper that went around that registered people who were there and didn't testify. That is an important role also. I mean, we could have been there forever if everybody who'd been there had testified, and so I think we made our point without wearing out our welcome, and I thank everybody for that. The next item on the agenda is the report from the Executive Director.
Okay, thank you. The first item is rules, and I just want to update you with the fact that we are still working on the rules. We really haven't gotten enough to a stage to bring it to you again. We've had, as you just discussed, quite a few interruptions in the last period of time. But we haven't forgotten them, and we are working on them. case statistics as the next thing. I believe I've been sending you things as I get them. I try to sometimes, if a lot of email come in at once, I'm sure I neglect some things, but hopefully you've received that. I wanted to point out a couple of things that I said in my testimony. Actually, the exercise was a very good one because we really took a look at differences between our activity prior to July 1, 2000, and then since that time. And so, that we've been tracking, but we haven't really broken it down with the pre-commission numbers. And that was really informative. In 2002, we served 709 voc rehab clients. In 1999, we served 602. And at the end of December of 02, we have served 470 in the voc rehab track. Now that's a smaller number because it starts again at October 1. Of course, it includes people who are still clients, but then we start with new referrals, and so the number grows through the year. So far, by the end of December of this federal fiscal year, 470 vocational rehabilitation clients and 311 in the independent living track. Staff updates. There hasn't been a lot of activity, but two changes. Earlier you met Wendy O'Connor, who is new with us. She started in mid-January, so she's still in training, and she will be the apartment person. I always call them the apartment supervisor, which Mary Davis and Julie Crane always appreciated, but anyway, we're real happy to have Wendy on board, and so far the training's going really well, and she's doing a great job.
Welcome.
And then the other change is Mary Davis has recently returned from maternity leave, so we're real happy to have her back. Let's see. Okay, the next item I just wanted to mention, emergency preparedness. In the fall of 99, you'll remember we began getting a plan in order just in case Y2K really did cause some problems, and that helped us to put a plan in place for our offices in case of any emergency. So that actually was good, and we haven't looked at that very much since then, but with all the different codes of threat that or preparedness in the country right now, we've realized we need to look at that again, and we have developed a plan that will be in place for the apartments. What we had done before really was more specific to the offices and doing the business, but we've decided in the apartments we need to have a system and know who's in charge if there is some kind of an emergency and so on. And we also then are going to, in each of our office plans, look at that again each year so that it's fresh and people know what that is. You know, it's all pretty basic as far as just steps to follow and who contacts the authorities and whatever. And then Social Security reimbursement. Just wanted to mention, in 2002, we generated $311,872 of Social Security reimbursement. There has not been, I don't think we've had any new come in since November. Am I right on that one, Bill?
We had, I think, one come in October.
Okay, right, but that was just... Okay, so, and Dottie and Carlos very soon are going to be looking at the closures again and see if there are some new ones that we can submit for. So that's always in the works. Also, incidentally, prior to in 99, we generated $56,553 of reimbursement. So that's a really large change, and we're proud of that.
Can I stop you right there, Pearl?
Please.
I have a question on the Social Security. What goes into the reimbursement amount? Is it how does Social Security figure out what amount they reimburse?
There's a formula which has to be pre-approved by which we're paid a portion, or sort of given credit for a portion of the costs that are internal to for our staff and just to do the business of the commission, which actually, since we don't contract out very much, is most of what we do, even the center costs, which are significant, and the counseling and training in the field. So we don't get dollar for dollar on that, but there is a formula. And then we do submit the full dollars that we spend on a person, whether it's for tuition, technology, aids and appliances, any kind of training, counseling that we might purchase separately. And so all of that is computed, and we submit our request. Sometimes the amount that they allow is less than what we put in for, but we've really been running quite well with getting the full amount. Does that answer?
Do they, when they, like, for instance, technology would be something that'd be pretty open-ended, what you could spend on a client. Did they, say you spent, $8,000 in technology per person. Do they come back and only approve so much of that $8,000, or do they get into that micro level when they disallow some of the reimbursement?
When they disallow some of it, they don't give us any indication as to why the amount was less that I've ever seen. Is there anything Carlos, that's different from that?
No, and usually it's not a lot of difference. And also sometimes they give us more money too.
On occasion.
So, and we don't want to make things mad. It always helps to keep a good relationship. But I will say, because of the formula, usually we have the equipment, tuition, those direct services in a different box. And for what I see and remember, all of that gets reimbursed. Sometimes it's just, in general terms, how much time or how long the person was under services. I think that's the part that they sometimes question.
Thank you. Is that?
Yeah. So basically, because I know one of the concerns mentioned about the people with complaints 611, people not getting equipment, and actually, since getting a person placed allows for the Social Security reimbursement, there's really a no disincentive at all, and actually an incentive to spend whatever is necessary to get a person gainfully employed so that Social Security can reimburse.
Right. Now, with the complaint that was in 611, it was actually that something had been purchased for the client and then the client hadn't gotten it. Now, if that ever happens, I want to hear about it because that's not how we do business. Mm-hmm. And, we need to make sure such things don't happen.
Okay.
Just, if I may just emphasize or mention that in order to get reimbursed, yes, the person needs to be gainfully employed. And gainfully, it's at least $1,330 every month. And for other disabilities, it's less than $800. So the standard for blind people in order to be gainfully employed is higher. And we are achieving that goal. I also I took some time to take a look at numbers because we are always compared with Iowa and New Mexico, which state is better. We got reimbursed more money than they did, meaning that we place people in better jobs than they did. So I think it's something that we should be proud of.
Carlos, what is the trial work period now? Is that 9 months yet or a year or?
But I'm sorry, what is what?
What is the trial work period for Social Security now? Is that 1 year or still?
It's 9 months.
9 months?
Yeah, the same.
So the reimbursement would have to wait till they've at least been employed for 9 months?
No, that has nothing to do with
okay.
With it. What they take a look at is how long since they were out of our services and gainfully employed. The entire work period, it's a little different. That's in order to keep your benefits or be out of benefits.
Okay.
But just not to confuse you, Dorothy, it's 9 months, but they have an extra month for some kind of waiver and 2 extra months for something else that I don't remember. So it's total of 12 months. Mm-hmm. And a blind person can still work and get the Social Security benefits. Mm-hmm. And trial work period per se is only 9 months.
Okay.
The extra 3 months I've always thought of as a grace period.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for the questions. I wanted to mention briefly about other proposed legislation. We've been trying to watch other things that might be relevant to blind consumers. One was the treasurer, state treasurer has a new system, and I believe I mentioned this at the last meeting, or she wants to get a new system for bringing receipts into the state. When she first presented her idea to an agency director's meeting several months ago, I talked with her about accessibility. It did not sound like an accessible system at all, and I didn't know if she knew anything about the accessibility requirement clause in law now. Apparently, there are other pretty major problems with the bill. She wants to use retirement funds to fund it, and that's against the law. So there are other aspects of it. DAS, who would implement it, is opposed to the bill. So I don't think we haven't worried about that too much more as we found out a little bit more about it.
The Commissioner of the Revenue is violently opposed to it.
Right.
He just did not.
Yeah.
It's a stupid thing.
Yeah.
According to her.
So I don't think is going to be a problem. Another one had to do with performance audits being done by the auditor's office. And I know you'll remember when we do have fiscal audits, we end up answering many questions about the nature of what we do and especially some of our confidence building activities and training. And so even within a fiscal audit, we get into some pretty major disagreements about what we do. And I think performance audits are perfectly fine, and that we should look at how we're doing and whether we're achieving what we should do. But I think to do it based on the bottom line, as you would with a business, is counterproductive at best. So, however, I certainly didn't want to make a big deal about not wanting to be audited, because that's not the point at all. And I do think if they would implement that, there would be costs. And of course, all of the budget areas are being cut rather than increased. So, if it would go through now or at any point, I think that we would work very closely with an auditor's office or whoever would perform it to make sure they see the federal standards and indicators, the audits that really are done on our performance by our major funder, as well as the law we operate under and so on, and just work to make sure they understand what it is we're about here. There's another bill about dog guide training. I haven't heard much about the status of that, but it was introduced last year and then carried over for this year. Those are the main things. We've tried to kind of watch each week as the new bills are reported. So if there's anything else that seems to be major that comes up, we'll let you know. But right now, those are the main things. Communication, Barbara, you mentioned at the beginning about perhaps finding ways to get the notice of our meetings out to more people. Bob Deaton did meet with the VIPS Board of Directors a week ago or so, and they would like to have more notice provided, especially to older blind Nebraskans. They tend not to use the Newsline. They're maybe less connected with, they don't have computers, you know, they're less likely to check the website. But they suggested, and I think we were kind of waiting for feedback from them as to if is this what would be helpful. But I would think if we would begin a process of sending a large print notice of each meeting prior to the meeting, maybe, you know, not necessarily 10 days, but 2 weeks maybe. I mean, we always know when and where the meeting is located. And that could go to each group leader. There's about 47 groups in the state right now. And then there are board members, 9 board members and 9 board alternates. We could easily do a large print mailing to those folks and they could disseminate it further. I mean, if we really needed to, we could do a large print mailing to all of our clients, our whole mailing list. But I think that really would be burdensome. You know, if you all feel that we should go in that direction, we can. But I definitely think it would be good to do a mailing to the groups.
Do they use RTV by any chance to get the word out? Because quite a few of the older people, I think.
You know, a lot of them have it, but I don't know how many really listen to it regularly. Yeah. But I wondered about that, too. And I honestly don't know if they put our announcements on there these days. They might not, and we may need to make sure that gets sent. But that still would depend on somebody happening to have it on right at that time. But I think that's is something we should...
A trial period, maybe 2 or 3 meetings or something that they...
Well, or even forever. I mean, it sure wouldn't cost anything, and it is something we should do.
Yeah, I'm... you know, in reading the correspondence and everything, I'm wondering if you know, there was mention made of not being able to read, you know, one thing or another and that type of thing. I'm wondering if, I don't know, that kind of assumes that everyone who is a group leader would find large print a medium of choice or something.
No, I don't mean to assume that. And if we knew for sure that somebody preferred Braille, you know, or tape, we can do that too. I was simplifying it. But most of them, to be quite honest, I would guess we'd be able to look at the list and figure it out easily, but most...
Well, does VIPS have a method of, you know, it seems like, you know, I don't know what the cost or the staff time involved would be in doing that kind of thing. You know, I think when we're dealing with... you know, things like cuts and priorities and that type of thing that we need to consider all of that too.
Right.
And I'm wondering,
how does VIPS internally put out the word?
Yeah, so if it
they
could internally
do, have a,
do
they do have a newsletter that comes out, is it 3 times a year now?
It does.
So the timing, you know, it might not always hit, but we definitely could begin putting it in the VIPS newsletter.
Well, if it comes out 3 times a year, and you know we generally meet 4 or so times a year or whatever, it seems like I would think that that would make more sense in terms of not increasing somebody's duties or expectations or whatever. And I think certainly encouraging people to call the 800 number or that kind of thing. I think encouraging people to do their thing is part of what we need to be about at all levels. And I really, you know, I'm not
I think we ought to notify the people that do the newsletter. And I mean, if somebody wants to find out when the meeting is, the commission's got an 800 number. You know, the fact that we have regular meetings, we meet four times a year. I mean, if it's in the newsletter three times, and I would tend to agree with you could call every one of them personally, but I mean, that's not how people are notified in the real world. About things. We want to encourage interest and participation, and that they have a newsletter already, and I think that's the format that I would think would be good to already, they already have a format to internally notify themselves of things and use that. And, you know, RTB, which is already out there, that should certainly be checked up on and have, you know, there's no reason our meetings can't be mentioned in that. I would certainly think there's the time and that could be a useful format for people to get information.
And while right now there may be quite a few who don't use the website or Newsline or those other things, I would think that as we progress and as we continue, you know, that there will be more and more people who will do that, and to some degree people will feel more encouraged to do those things. If they are, you know, if they're reminded that they're available and that type of thing, along with this other thing. You know, I don't want us to seem like we're not being proactive or anything, but I also don't think we ought to, you know, make more of it the responsibility of an already overworked staff, you know, and less of it the responsibility of the people who need to get the information.
Madam Chairman, mm-hmm. I'm wondering, you know, could there be public service announcements like on the major TV stations around the state? My understanding, there's no cost for them.
They're sort of tough though to get on any time, really. They usually put those on in the middle of the night or something. You very seldom hear the public service announcements. I know NFB and ACB, they all send their public announcements out. Once in a while you hear one, but.
Well, I know in Sioux City they have public service announcements. They call it Around Sioux Land. That's like 7 o'clock in the morning and noon, or 12:30 after the noon news, and that's on all the TV stations.
Well, I just to me, I mean, Newsline, RTB, their newsletter. I mean, that to me, that's just enough, and I don't think that the commission should take on an extra expense of doing a mass mailing. I just don't think that's we should do that and encourage people to, you know, people need to seek out what's going on in the world and they either have to do it through Newsline or RTB or read their newsletter, and that's I think would be my thought.
That makes a lot of sense. At the BIPS convention in a couple of months. I'm not sure if Barbara knows this yet. I think you do, but I'll be speaking, and she's been asked to speak as well to be a part of that. So
no, I
you didn't. Okay,
don't
I didn't
know about that.
But hopefully that will work. And even if the timing doesn't work out for Barbara Walker, I will be there, and I can definitely encourage all these things that you're saying to the group, and that means there will be about 200 or 300 people in one room at a public forum setting.
Where is that this year?
Hayes, it's Kearney. It's in Kearney.
Okay.
Same place, Bob. Madam Chair?
Yes.
I, you know, just to expand on my thinking, during the public forum,
Thank you, sir. Nice water.
No. I was thinking that your participation in that, Barbara, and Bill Oyster also, I haven't talked to either one of you, would be good, because not only are you members of the board, but you're also members of the two major consumer groups in the state. And there is a perception in the VIPS group that the ACB and the NFB represent blind people who belong to those organizations, but they don't represent VIPS, members who belong to VIPS. Okay? And I really want to address that perception. It's wrong, and they need to start thinking in terms of using this opportunity to commission. You know, they haven't done that yet. So I'm hoping that you and Bill will consider taking part in that public forum.
I think it would have merit.
Great. Where's it going to be?
It'll be, the public forum will be May 14th.
It's in Kearney.
On a Wednesday, through about a hand.
Okay, and thank you. And the other thing that I just want to mention for the public, just encouraging again to use the toll-free number, and you can use that to contact any of our offices with regard to finding out about meetings, but also for any purpose, you're welcome to use that toll-free number. There are other things that I'll be talking about, but all of them are included in either old or new business, so unless you have specific questions for me, I'm done.
Okay. Does anyone have specific questions?
Not this time.
Not hearing any. We'll move on. And so the next thing on the agenda is old business. And one of the things that we do as a general rule here, partly so that people know that the kinds of things that we receive as we're dealing with these meetings and you know, to keep ourselves on the same page, and also so that if there are things that we have received that there that someone is interested in hearing more about or whatever, we make it public. In this day and age of email, there are a lot of materials that can be disseminated that we don't bring hard copies to meetings, but we do recognize and understand that as a part of the public meeting and as a part of our being a public body, that a lot of the things that we receive are public materials and are the business of everybody we serve. And so one of the things we have been doing is letting people know at the public meeting what kinds of materials we're receiving. We did receive the goals for the commission. We've been receiving the Changing Times transition newsletter. We've been receiving the Moving Forward that Pearl sends out from time to time, that generally has different theme topics, and that is one of the ways that a lot of us receive communication, and I think that they're a good thing. We had correspondence about changing our meeting date because of the change in the staff meeting, and the longitudinal study from the Rehabilitation Services Administration that shows that vocational rehabilitation services do help with employment outcomes. You know, we talk about that a lot. It's good to have things that back that up. We've received several communications from Cheryl Poff concerning deaf-blind consumers. And one of them that I think is particularly noteworthy is the one suggesting that
the commission be a practicum site for interpreters. That's the kind of thing that I think if we can make those connections, partner with other entities and that kind of thing, it really does make a difference in what we can do and how our services can be expanded and other people can know who we are and how to do things. And then some of the things like information about getting the afternoon of the 24th of December off and things like that, the ongoing requests for leave and things like that. And then the annual reports of various kinds. And pay increase information, fiscal reports,